This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Welcome back, everybody. Hall of Fame time is upon us, and here is a special 30 with Murdy that really needs no introduction. A few weeks ago, I had the chance to sit down with the greatest closer of all time and the first man ever elected to the Hall of Fame by unanimous vote of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Here is my conversation with the one and only Mariano Rivera. So for years, we have been referring to you as future Hall of Famer Mariano Rivera. Everywhere you go, everybody refers to you as future Hall of Famer. Now that you are an actual Hall of Famer, how does that feel? What's different?
Oh my gosh, Sweeney, this thing is, it's amazing. I mean, well, the only difference is that I'm a Hall of Famer now. the rest is the same, man. You know, I mean, I thank God for that. And my teammates, everybody that was part of my life, obviously my family, you know, but life continue. I had to move on, you know, and it's great to see that, the job that you've done for, that you love, the career that you love for so many years, the tears that you shed, the laugh that you share. At the end, you know, I mean, the Lord somehow smile on you and you know, it was a blessing. It was a blessing, Sweeney. I mean, being able to talk or to say that you are a Hall of Fame.
Your visit there in February, when you got to see everything and see the place where people are going to come see your jersey, your plaque, and everything else, what was that like for you?
Well, I went to Cooperstown. I've never been there before. You know, I was like a child in a candy store. It was amazing, you know. I went through the museum and saw everything. You know, I was able to see Roberto Clemente's hat, uniform, Carew uniform, bad. I mean, Ted Williams bad. I mean, bad. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing, you know, it brought me to, I mean, like, wow, you know. And knowing that I would have a little place on this building, amazing. I was like, I couldn't comprehend what was going on. You know, I was just thankful because it was something, it was beyond, you know, beyond my imagination.
It's certainly more than just a little place, but I understand because there have been so many great players coming through there. I understand what you're talking about. But a lot of those great players will be there with you on induction day. You're going to be standing up and on a stage behind you, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Sandy Koufax, so many great players again, right behind you, listening to you speak, and now you will be one of them. Have you thought about what that moment, what that feeling is going
to
be like?
Sweeney, no, I haven't, because again, you know, when I try to think about it, my mind goes bananas. Yeah, I had to stop. You know, yes, you know, I'll be considered at that moment one of them. You know, a rookie, a little baby, however you can call me, I'm one of them. You know, and that's the beauty about it. That, you know, I mean, they consider yourself one of them. You consider yourself one of them. People consider yourself one of them, you know, and that's what it is, you know. You play the game with social prestige, play the game with so much love, passion, determination, giving the team opportunity to win, the fans opportunity to see something special. And at the end, you know, be remembered as a Hall of Famer. It's, you know, it's It's every player's dream. You know, every player's dream is to be all-star. Every player's dream is to be champion. Every player's dream is to have a great career. And every player's dream is to be a Hall of Famer. But the thing is that not too many have the opportunity to be. When I think like that, I'm like, wow. I only have to say I'm a blessed man.
There will be some people on stage with you that you have some history with, and you helped get there along the way with you. Let's start with Mike Messina. You saved 49 games for him, including 10 in that final season when he won 20 for the first time and probably put himself forward to joining you on that stage at the Hall of Fame. What do you remember about being teammates with Mike Messina?
I remember being teammate with Mike Messina. It was so fine that, you know, you always, as a closer, you always want to be there for your starters and for the rest of the team, obviously. But I remember when he was winning, he won his 19th game, and his last game was in Boston. Mm-hmm. Okay, 2008, I have my shoulder. We just finished in Toronto. We got disqualified in Toronto, yes. And I shut it down. So with my shoulder, it was so, I was pitching in pain. So I had to get surgery, and I shut it down and said, you know, I won't pitch no more. There's no need to. You know what I mean? We just been qualified, and I just wanted to make sure that I get my surgery as soon as possible so I get ready for the season next year, 2009. So 2008, Messina was pitching in the first game, yep, of a doubleheader in Boston. And again, I was shut down. All of a sudden, the game is on the line. You know, I'm in the bullpen with uniform, everything, suit for the game, but I wasn't pitching. And I'm like, man, Messina, he needs me. And I pitch. I believe I pitched 2 innings or inning plus to save his game, because he was winning. We were winning by 3-4 runs all the time. The bullpen gave up to maybe 1 run.
2 runs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I come and say, no, I'll pitch. I pitched for Messina, and I did. And he won his number 20. Yeah. I was proud to say that I was able to help Messina for his time in his career to win 20 games. You know, it was amazing that he was able to do it for so long in a competitive way.
Roy Halladay's family will be there, and tragically, he's not with us anymore. You helped him along the way, and I know you took some grief from this, but, you know, because he beat the Yankees a lot because of what you did. But the idea of just talking your craft with another pitcher and helping him through something like that, what is that experience like for you?
To me, Roy was a great player, a friend. I didn't know him real, real well, but I considered him a friend. And, you know, always when you're in the All-Star games, you talk. You speak to other players, other pitchers. And obviously, you know, we were talking, and he has approached me to teach him about the quarter, tell him about the quarter. And I told him, you know, yeah, this is how I do it, this is how I throw it, you know, and it's just grip here, pressure here, and release it like that, and the rest is history. I mean, he was able to use it and learn it, not like mine. No one threw it like me. but he was able to use it in, I would say, 70%. And he was effective, especially against us. Mm-hmm. And the guys were killing me, Derek and Posada and the rest of the team. Oh, why you show the man? Because they put it on TV when we was in center field, yeah, you know, talking about it. And we were talking about pitching. And for that, it's amazing. But I don't regret moments like that or times where I was able to teach others. Because, I mean, we need to share. You know, we need to express ourselves in different ways, not only verbally, but effectively. You know what I mean? He was one of the hundreds that came to ask me about the pitch. And he was able to take advantage of that.
Edgar Martinez, well-deserved. You helped put him there too, because he did very well, right?
I did. I told him, I said, Edgar, man, you owe me a dinner. Because if it wasn't for me, you won't be in the Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? Again, you know, a great guy, you know, player that everybody respect, player that went into his business, and I couldn't get him out. You know, finally, later on my career, I was able to make some pitches that he wouldn't like, and I was able to get him out a few times. But the times that I get him out, it was because no one can hit that pitch. Not even Edgar can hit that pitch, you know. But he was amazing. And again, again, you see people like that. They're always pushing and pushing to do the best for them and for the team, you know. And at the end, you know, they got, I guess, retributed or compensated back to them in a measured way.
There are two people who I know would have loved to have been at the ceremony this summer. They're no longer with us, so they're not able to be there, but I would like you to tell me a little bit about the impact they had on your life and your career. First is Herb Rayburn, the scout who signed you for the Yankees and started this whole journey with you.
Yes, I mean, obviously, Herb for me was something special that, first of all, me, the Lord, they put Herb on my path so he can sign me for the New York Yankees. You know, Herb was always there for me, fighting for me, allowing me to pitch, giving me the opportunity to pitch. I remember that I was supposed to go to Dominican Republic at age 20, and he fought for me. He fought for me, and that he sent me to Tampa, you know, and the rest was history. So he was that type of man that when he was there for you, he was there for you 100%. And not only for me, I saw him doing it with many others, you know, but I was one of the bunches that he helped because they were his players. But I have a great relationship with Herb. And yes, it's unfortunately he won't be there, but that's one person that I surely wanted to be there.
I've spoken to Herb's daughter, and she's very proud of everything that that you've accomplished and have his name out there because it's attached to you. He passed away a little over a year ago, about a year and a half ago. This past January, we lost Mel Stottlemyer, and he was with you for a very long time. I know you shared a lot of personal time with him. What are your thoughts when you think of him and what he meant to you?
Mel was another friend, pitching coach, that always was there for me. I remember Mel took me to instructional ball right after we won a World Series. He said, Mariano, we need to work on this. I believe that this will help you. This will help you be more effective and more longer on your career. Longevity. We work about making throw less pitches. I was using more pitches, more strikeouts. He says, well, we don't need to throw 30 pitches or 20 pitches in the inning. Focus to get on the 10th, on the 12th, the 13 pitches in inning, and you will be okay. And we did. And everybody saw after that how affected, thank God, I was with few pitches. You know, and I believe that that's one of the keys that I was able to do it for so long and stay healthier for so long.
This was after the 96 World Series?
After, I think it was 98.
98, wow.
After 98. After 98 World Series, I believe we went to instructional ball to work just a little bit on just work more, throw a lot of more strikes around the plate. Don't try to blow out people. Just try to allow them to help me make contact and get ground balls and double plays. And I did, and it was good. It was good.
Obviously, a big impact on your career. There's a day that people have talked about a lot, and I've talked to Derek about this. He says it's all your fault. The day in 1995 when both of you were sent down to the minors on the same day. I know, you know, you both shared a lot of pain that day, but What was it about you? You've also both said that you're coming back. You will be back. What else did you guys talk about that day? What else do you remember about that day?
Well, we remember is being almost in tears. But at the same time, there was the passion. There was the fighting, the fight in us, that fire that we never give up. You never would have been sent down from nowhere. In that moment, yes, it was my fault. I didn't do good. And they sent me down both at the same time. And we were there in Bennigan's, Inglewood, New Jersey. And we, sure enough, we were saying, hey, we're coming back. And we're coming back for good. We just had to do whatever it takes to come back and stay forever.
If he doesn't get 100% of the vote next year, what are you going to say to him?
You know what? One thing that we always have in common is it was a pattern. When I was in single A, we were in the same team, single A. I'm older than him, but the point is that I had surgery, so I had to hold back 2 years. So we started in the Florida State League. They moved me to double A. When they moved me to double A, sure enough, Derek, like a month after, he's in double A. Then they moved me to triple A. Sure enough, Derek was there with a month later, triple A. And the same to the big leagues. They sent us down the same day to triple A. We almost literally came back up almost the same time to the big leagues again. The same way, me and then him. You know, it doesn't surprise me at all. And I will be upset at him, okay, if he doesn't accomplish what he needs to accomplish. You know, because, I mean, now, you know, I was the first one to be 100% unanimous. I expect him to join me the same way, you know, because it has been a pattern. But, you know, happens or not, to me, he is a unanimous in my book. Because, I mean, I saw Derek play day in and day out for all those years. And if it's someone that I will want every big league player to hustle, to play the game the right way, to run to first base, even in that ground ball, it has to be like him. He always gave his best at all time. And, you know, again, for me, he is special in my book. He's my brother, my family, you know, and I don't expect nothing less than that. He don't expect nothing less than that, you know. So, I mean, again, you know, someone competitive, someone that push himself to the limit, you know. It wasn't given to him, you know. He worked for it. You know, he earned it. The job that he got in 96 to be the starting shortstop for the New York Yankees, he earned it. He earned it. He fought. He worked hard every day, every year. I saw him make many errors, and the following year, he got better. The following year, he got better, you know, and only because he worked at it, you know. It wasn't just because he got talent and he didn't do nothing and he was there. No, he bust his tail off to work and be the best that he could be.
It's a good thing for you too, because if he didn't win that job in spring training, they were going to trade you to Seattle.
Imagine,
to get a shortstop,
to
right?
To get a shortstop. Yeah. So, you know, that's why, you know, as a brothers, we back up, we take care of each other. You know what I mean? So it's amazing. It was amazing.
There are two scenes in my mind that when I think about you and your career, and I would like you to kind of take me inside them and tell me like what goes through your mind in those. One is the jog to the mound from the bullpen at Yankee Stadium. And we all know the scene that we've seen a million times, the music blaring and the crowd going crazy. But I'm curious, because the last time you did that, you and I did an event at Bernie Williams Charity a few months after your final game. And we watched a video of that. And as it's happening, they play it, and they play the Bob Shepard introduction, which he had already passed, so it was recorded, of you before you went to the mound. And you leaned into me and said, hey, that's Bob Shepard, because in the moment that it happened, you were not aware of it. I'm curious, was that always the case for you? What was happening with you on the jog from the bullpen to the mound? Were you aware of all the craziness and the loud stuff that's happening around you? Or was there something else going through your mind as you took each step in?
Every time that I took those doors from the bullpen, guiding me to the mound, I had one thing in mind. I wasn't aware of my surroundings. I wasn't aware of the music. I wasn't aware of who was in the field. I wasn't aware of none of that stuff. I was aware of who I had to face and get one out at the time. And I was, every time that I was stepping to that field, getting closer to that mound, the intensity of determination and focusedness and being able to do what I supposed to do in all those years, you know, that's what I have it in mind. In mind, yes, okay, I'm coming into the eighth inning. I have 6 outs to get, but I cannot get 6 outs in one shot. I wish I can throw one pitch and get 6 outs, but I couldn't. So one by one. That was my mentality. That was what I was focused on. The rest, I didn't pay attention at all. As a matter of fact, when I was pitching after the inning, let's say I pitched the eighth, finished the eighth, going into the dugout, friends of mine, they said that I looked at them and they were doing this and screaming my name and they said they didn't acknowledge them. But I said, man, I never saw you. Mm-hmm. That's how intense it was for me, how focused I was when I was pitching. You know, it's true there is a tunnel vision because I believe it. I experienced it. So when you talk about tunnel vision, I know what you're talking about. When someone mentioned tunnel vision, I know what they're talking about because I live it. You know, so I was able to be so focused that I lost control or perhaps on time. I just was in a mission to accomplish a mission that I was the man to go for.
The other scene in my mind that I always flash back to when I think about you is from spring training. You're sitting at your locker 8:30 in the morning. And spread out on the floor all around you are all the young Latin players from all over, many different countries. And they're not even always young. Sometimes they're veteran players. And they're seated next to you. They're seated at your feet. And it's you holding court, you talking to them. And I always found it fascinating how open you were and giving with your time to them. And really the look on their faces as they were talking to you. What were you talking to them about? What were those conversations like?
You know, Sweeney, there are times, you know, where most of them rookies, you know, also veterans. And we just talk about what a privilege it is for us to be there another year or for the first time or a few years. You know, and I was being able to see them grow. You know, I mean, the Cano, the Melky, Veras, the Sanchez, you know, see them all growing up, you know. To me, that was priceless. It was no price for that because I was imparting, I was investing in them, you know, something that I wish someone did for me. I was giving them or putting in them, yes, we can, you know, hope, insurance, knowing that you there because you earn it, you there because you're good, you there because you're special, and don't allow no one to tell you something different. or something less than that. Not because of where you came from, not because you are Latin, not because you're black, even because white. There were some white players there, you know? I say, it don't matter where you come from or the backgrounds. The matter is that you are here in the same thing that we are. We are a team, so we have to take advantage of this opportunity that a lot of people will desire to have, but they can't. And now you're here with the opportunity to do something special. Don't miss it. Don't take it for granted. Yeah, give your best. Those were the conversation that we yearly, year after year, you saw me holding basically court in front of young boys and also older men, you know. But to me it was special. To me it was something that, you know, again, if I had to do it all over again, I would do it the same way. Because, I mean, that gave me satisfaction that I put something in them. And when I see them in the big leagues having success and pushing forward, I say, man, that's the way.
People who see you now or saw you throughout your career saw a very successful man. And you look around now, well-spoken, well-dressed. You know, you have wealth because of your accomplishments in the baseball field. And you've raised a family in a much different environment than what you grew up in. But can you, the people that you were talking about, that you were talking to, you share something with them. It's very difficult to come to the U.S. as a teenager or a young man, and all you don't know is how to play baseball. And you don't speak a lot of English and don't know how to make your way around. Can you express to people who see you now and see the person you are now how difficult a path that is?
Sweeney, you touch a subject that I wish everybody touched in more. Because, I mean, we are giving them, us, the players, we don't teach them right. We need to learn the language. It was so difficult for me. Because yes, I mean, people saw the results, the after result, but people never saw from minor league to the big leagues. They never saw all those years, you know, what I went through. Going to bed crying because I couldn't communicate. I couldn't speak the language. The frustration, not about the game. The game was in somehow easier, but everything else, the process that I went through from minor league to the big leagues, it was a teaching. It was a life teaching. And I understood that for me to be better, I have to learn the language. And I made myself, thank God, they gave me the courage and the mentality to learn the language. I was able to communicate with my teammates, communicate with my pitching coach, and communicate with my manager. That was important to me. I need to know what they were telling me. I need to know how I have to go to my business, what my concerns, how I do it. I need to relate that message. So when I understood that the language, it will be a big role in my developing, in my career, I was all for. And I pushed myself to learn the language. I don't speak well, but I understood anything and everything that you wanted to tell me. So that was, for me, was special. And that was the catapult to success, because I learned the language. What I'm trying to say with that we need to learn the language. We cannot rely in others to give us, to send the message, because you don't know what that person is saying. You might say something and that person heard something else, and that's the message that he is gonna release to the media. And then the paper says, oh, I didn't say that. Well, he said it. All right? How you avoid that? You learn the language. Easy.
What was your best day on the field? What do you think of?
My best day on the field, Sweeney, was wearing the uniform. My best day on the field wasn't just a moment where I take place doing something. No. We have a lot of moments like that, great moments like that. But every time that I have an opportunity to put that uniform day on day for 19 seasons, man, to me it was, you know, I was wearing the same uniform that Babe Ruth wore, the same uniform that Mickey Mantle, Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio, Berra, and many others. To me, I had the opportunity to wear that same uniform. Man, I had to honor that. And for me, that was the moment.
Did you have a worse day on the field?
No. Everything that happened to me was a teaching, or if not, just a moment to grow and get better. You know, I mean, we have difficult moments. Yes, defeat, World Series, playoff, regular season, you know, injuries. But I don't regret any of that. I won't change it, any of that. If I had to do it all over again, I want it to be the same way all over again.
A lot of times when people ask me about, like, what are some of your great moments, it's funny because all the saves, they don't stand out to me because it was, you did the job you were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. The ones that you didn't finish are the ones that stand out. They're more memorable. What did the losses teach you?
The losses teach me that I had to push. I had to do something different. I had to learn from them. And sometimes they just flat out beat you. Nothing to learn, nothing to be teach, nothing that you had to change anything. They had a job. Imagine this, sweetie. If you always do your job when you go outside, I mean, you will never appreciate how to be in the mountaintop if you've never been in the valley. You know, how you know how what it feels? Because you've never been defeated, you know? Mm-hmm. So you appreciate it when you defeat and you have to get up. You have to push yourself to get to the mountaintop, step by step. That's why you appreciate it. So for me, it was just that, you know, learn when you have to learn and then take it when you have to take it, because they just flat beat you up.
You've made New York your home. You're a New Yorker now. You're very involved in your community with schools, yes, and churches. Yes. What do you, when you get officially inducted into the Hall of Fame, it essentially closes the book on the baseball part of your life. What do you want the second half of your life to be?
Well, I want to be my second half of my life, I want to be greater than my first half. How? I was saving games. Now I wanted to save life, to be different in somebody's life, somebody's teenager's life, man's life. It don't matter what life is, as long we can touch them. That is my goal in life for the rest, from now to the rest of my life. The Lord gave me 40, 20, 30, 10, one more year. He only knows. I wanted to do something for somebody else. That's what I wanted to do with. Matter of fact, they do talk about we are working to build a learning center in New Rochelle. Why a learning center? Because there's a lot of kids on the streets that need guidance. They need someone to step up. They need someone that has been there, has done it, has been successful, and can give you an opportunity for you to accomplish that. I want to be that person, you know? So, and obviously I'm going to need help, and I'm going to be talking to you guys,
okay,
for you guys to promote what I want to do. But at the same time, that's what I wanted to do, Sweeney. I wanted to seem like, I don't stop. I always ask the Lord to give me wisdom, but also to give me health so I can be strong to help others. And I don't help others by sending other people to do the job. I do the job with my good hands and my two good feet. And that's what I want. I want the Lord to keep me strong so that I can go and help and touch other people's life. That when I die, someone will say, man, this boy was a team player. That's what I want to say.
Thank you for all your time and for all the memories. And I want you to enjoy that day up on the stage. It's one that not many people get to experience. I know you're looking forward to it. I hope it's everything you dreamed it would be.
It will be everything and beyond, Sweeney, because, I mean, it's mean that the Lord has blessed me in an amazing way, and He is in control. So I will enjoy.
The always thoughtful and insightful Mariano Rivera. Listening to him speak here makes me look forward to his speech on Induction Day in Cooperstown. Be sure to go check out our episodes with fellow Hall of Fame inductee Mike Messina and the headliner in next year's class, Derek Jeter, who talks about his former teammates who are entering the Hall this summer. You can find the 30 with Murdy archive on radio.com and on iTunes. Subscribe and check out all our past episodes. Until next time, thank you for listening.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.